tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. This is Ebony Johnson hosting Urban Connections. Your host Donna Wolf is out, as well as Barry Jackson. And we are here with the great pleasure I have of being in studio with Dr. Dineo Cabelli, who is the professor and director of gynecology oncology at KU School of Medicine at the University of Kansas. And I just want to say welcome to Urban Connections and to KKFI.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
I am glad that you're here, too. I want to say for our listening audience, especially if my sister is listening, my sister, Ravian Green, who had the pleasure of has the pleasure of doing your hair, I think a couple of times. But she talked to me about a conversation that she had with you and the work that you do. And I said, well, I'd be interested in interviewing her. Will you see if she would be up for it? And my sister said, yeah. And so she texts you and you say yes. So I'm so glad that you're able to join us here on Urban Connections. Appreciate you accepting the invitation.
Thank you.
So today what we really want to focus on is a conversation around cancer, and mm-hmm. in particular with African American women. And I would like to start out by just asking you, Dr. Cabelli, what is cancer? And I say that to distinguish it from other diseases. And it's so many types of cancer.
Yes.
So what is it specifically, and what makes it unique from other forms of diseases?
Well, cancer is a broad term, but it really actually is multiple different kinds of diseases. But we term cancer when cells that are usually part of a normal organ start growing abnormally. And okay. not only do they grow abnormally in a particular organ, let's say in the uterus, but they can also spread. So cancer is really defining a group of cells that start out normally and something mm-hmm. happens, either a genetic alteration or exposure to some sort of environmental insult or something that happens over time that leads these cells to start growing abnormally. They invade into the organ and then they can spread. Mm-hmm. So we have cancers of the uterus, cancers of the ovary, cancers of the cervix, which actually act very, very differently, but can spread to other organs and cause problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so those cancers are very different from somebody who has a lung cancer or a prostate cancer. But, you know, lots of these cancers are treated with surgery and with chemotherapy and with radiation and with a variety of new targeted agents. And so it's important that people who are diagnosed with cancer really receive care from people who specialize in the cancer of that particular organ so that they get the best care possible.
And for anyone who's listening, would their doctor normally tell them you need to go and see a specialist in that particular area? Or,
well, it depends on what type of cancer it is and how a person presents. What I really like to emphasize for women's cancers, mm-hmm. Which is what I treat and what I take care of,
mm-hmm.
that lots of women's cancers can actually be detected and diagnosed early, where we have more than a 90% cure rate for some of them.
Mm.
So, for instance, the best example that I have is one type of cancer that we know we can eliminate, that's cervical cancer. Cervical cancer is associated with infection with human papillomavirus. So the HPV mm-hmm. virus, there are mm-hmm. lots of different viruses, but there's some subtypes that can cause cervical cancer over time.
Yeah.
And so we have multiple ways to prevent this from happening. Number one, we actually have a vaccine against human papillomavirus, the HPV vaccine,
mm-hmm.
that we encourage children ages 11 to 13 to get vaccinated, so that prevents them when they grow older from developing cervical cancer and other types of cancers associated with HPV.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we have for cervical cancer is we have pap tests that can detect precancer. So mm-hmm. women over the age of 21, we encourage them to go to their gynecologist so they get routine pap tests. Mm-hmm. If there's anything abnormal, we can detect it and prevent it from becoming a cancer by treating it early. And then most women with cervical cancer, if they do develop it, we can diagnose it early. So 90% of women diagnosed with early stage ovarian cervical cancer, are treated with surgery alone. Unfortunately, I just want to finish the story mm-hmm. about cervical cancer. This is one cancer we could probably eliminate in the United States. But unfortunately, African American women are 2 times more likely to be diagnosed with it and 2 times more likely to die from it. So mm-hmm. that's one cancer that I really like to talk about because mm-hmm. that's one that I think we can prevent.
What is your take on particular with African American women and the way we receive treatment mm-hmm. and how that ties into our cultural heritage? And what I'm really trying to, I guess what I'm really thinking about here is two things at once, but specifically for some of us who may be weary of certain, you know, tests or certain vaccinations yeah. or certain ways of, you know, of medicine and taking yep. a lot of drugs and and doing various things that we've seen that have come back and been harmful to folks, you yep. know, and not as helpful. What is, in the work that you do and the women that you treat, how do you marry those things of, well, if you want to have more of a holistic approach or if if there are certain things that you feel that's not the way you would want to treat your body in order to heal it. What are you seeing in your practice?
Well, I think that I'll go back to the example of cervical cancer. Okay. I moved here from Nashville, Tennessee, mm-hmm. and I worked very closely with colleagues at Meharry Medical College and Vanderbilt University to come up with a program to talk about vaccination to prevent cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. And what we did is we started in the community. We started with an advisory board of community members, mothers, daughters, and sons, and mm-hmm. we would meet regularly mm-hmm. to talk about the fears mm-hmm. of vaccination and to talk about the importance of it mm-hmm. for this particular disease. Mm-hmm. And we spent about 2 years doing this work. Mm. And I think what's really important is trying to listen to where people are coming from and understanding their perspective yeah. and then providing scientific evidence and then having a discussion. Mm-hmm. And I guess my biggest win from that situation is we talked about the fact that there are other vaccines that we routinely give babies and children. Mm-hmm. For instance, hepatitis B vaccine is something that we vaccinate our babies with before they leave the hospital. Mm. And hepatitis B is associated with blood transfusions, IV drug use, and it can be sexually transmitted. But we don't make those connections mm. or stigmatize the vaccine when we vaccinate our babies. Mm-hmm. But somehow we stigmatize the human papillomavirus vaccine mm-hmm. and people don't want their kids to have it.
Yeah.
And so after this 2-year process of talking to this community board, I remember I hadn't been there for a while and I think my hair looked different. I came back a few months later yeah. and this one mom said, well, you know, we vaccinate babies against hepatitis B. Mm-hmm. So she sort of spoke about what we had talked about and mm-hmm. reiterated it, and it made sense to her. And I don't know to this day if she ever decided to vaccinate her yeah. children, but we had moved the needle as far as her thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And in that conversation, we also talked about the history of disparities in the African-American community mm-hmm. and really talked about, you know, things that people worry about in the back of their minds, like the Tuskegee, the syphilis.
Yes, yes.
And that was actually...
Okay, we are back. That is the first time that since I've been here, in the 2.5 years I've been here, that I've had that encounter. So, but important to be mindful
public service
of
alert.
The
yes.
of yeah. the thunderstorm alert.
Yeah.
So, before the alert, though, we were talking about some of the fears that people
yes.
have.
Yeah.
That
oh,
we
so
have,
yes.
specifically as an African American yes. community with the Tuskegee experiment.
Yes.
And
yeah. So one of the issues that we have currently with cancer treatments is there are not enough African Americans who are going on clinical trial. And I think that that's part of the stigma of that could be related to the syphilis experiment. And one of the issues with the syphilis trial is that those men did not receive treatment.
Mm-hmm.
They were just being monitored for looking at the symptoms of syphilis. They thought they were getting treatment and they weren't.
Okay.
And so we now have lots of safeguards in place where people sign permission before they enter any kind of clinical trial or new experimental drug.
Mm-hmm.
They understand and they're counseled as to what they're going through. I just want to veer off just for 2 seconds mm-hmm. and tell a story about my own mother who called mm-hmm. me today.
Mm-hmm.
She is a cancer survivor of leukemia, which is mm-hmm. a blood cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she underwent a clinical trial in her mid-70s with this mm-hmm. new drug because they actually tested her blood and found that there was a genetic mutation that made her cells sensitive to this new experimental drug.
Mm-hmm.
She was treated in Tennessee. And then she underwent stem cell transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's on another experimental drug to help with the side effects of the stem cell transplant.
Mm-hmm.
She is now cancer-free 2 years later. And it's because she trusted the process of entering mm-hmm. these clinical trials and benefited from them.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets close follow-up and all sorts of stuff by being mm-hmm. on trial. And I think a couple of problems with African-American women and men, our community, and interfacing with the medical establishment is mm-hmm. there's an issue of trust.
Yeah.
And part of it has to do with just making sure that we're getting access to the right information and the mm-hmm. right care. The other piece of it that I'm very passionate about is we need more African-American doctors.
Mm-hmm.
The number of African-American men going into medicine is actually declining.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting to be lower than the numbers in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm interested in is encouraging young boys and girls who are interested in science, interested mm-hmm. in math, who are curious about questions, to enter the field.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long haul, but it's really, 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 it's just so satisfying, this
yeah.
career. I just love everything that I do.
Yeah.
And I try to explain that we need more people who understand the issues from our communities to enter the field.
Mm-hmm. I definitely have that myself, the trust issue,
yeah.
but wanting to take the best care of myself that mm-hmm. I possibly can and receive the best care that I can. And I'd like to shift into a conversation around how the medical industry is changing and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how things are different with people taking back some of their own personal responsibility
mm-hmm.
for their care. Wellness centers
yeah.
coming up, more people focused on tapping into nutritionists and maybe chiropractors or yoga or Pilates or meditation and
mm-hmm.
various types of ways, even spiritually, you know, to heal themselves. How do you see that changing the landscape of what you do as a professional doctor?
Well, I don't see, I mean, I think that there, the internet has certainly mm-hmm. contributed a lot to people being able to have access to all sorts of information that
mm-hmm.
they never had access to before. And what I see as my role is, and I think it's very important, I think it's important for people to understand their own bodies, understand
yeah.
what makes them tick, understand how to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
I'm very much a proponent of wellness and
mm-hmm.
self-care.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important. But what I see my role is as an interpreter of the information.
Mm.
So patients or people will come to me who've Googled all sorts of things. And
yeah.
sometimes I have those days where I say, curse you, Dr. Google. You know, I just, because you can find absolutely anything if you Google it. And so I feel like my job is to interpret what you're bringing to me from what you've Googled. Okay. And the criteria I use are, very, very clear to me that you have to have had evidence, and scientific evidence to me means that it has to have gone through preclinical, meaning in the lab, and they've tested it in the lab. It's gone to clinical trials, and it's been tested in some ways in clinical trials, or people have looked over time to what's gone on in large populations. And then if it's a drug, it's very important that it's gone through the FDA process, and that it's gone through these rigorous kind of checks and balances. And then, but there are a lot of people who take herbal medications or other stuff that's not FDA approved. And the only caution that I have for people is that industry, unfortunately, is not as regulated. So somebody can take something, and the manufacturer can say, oh, this has whatever herbal remedies in there, but there's no guarantee that that's what's in there. And so I don't really have a problem with people using complementary methods along with the treatments that I'm offering. I just need to be aware of them. I need to understand them, and we need to make sure that we're not competing with the therapeutic outcome that we want. And so I will do my best to look up some of these herbal remedies that I tell people. I'm not a naturalist. I'm not a homeopathic doctor. I don't, you know, I don't have expertise in that area. And oftentimes I'd prefer if people are on chemotherapy or radiation to hold off on those other therapies while we're on active treatment, because I'm not an expert in those areas. I don't know if we're going to have competing side effects or perhaps something in there that could make cancer cells grow that I'm not aware of. But I'm very open to working with people who have, you know, who have complementary therapies to complement what I'm offering. I also want to make sure people are comfortable with their care. So if somebody, if I'm prescribing something and somebody's not taking it because they're not comfortable with me or what I'm saying, then that's a problem. And I think that happens a lot of times in our communities, that the doctor's prescribing medicine and people are going home and they're not taking it. And part of it is the communication gap in not being clear as to why it's important or working through some of the side effects of these medicines. A lot of what we use to treat cancer has some very significant side effects. But you have to balance that against the side effects of having the cancer. So there's nothing really that's without a side effect when we're treating cancer.
So, Dr. Cabelli, what about the drug industry in and of itself? I mean, and I say this even to you, just as, I mean, I know that you're a doctor and you know, and that's your profession. I say this also just as just human to human, you know, of, okay, well, the drug industry is a business, you know, and they want to keep people to keep taking drugs, and they, you know, they keep making drugs and they profit off of that. And I don't have an issue with, you know, with a business being profitable, but to what degree, you know, and to what level. And what I'm getting at here is I have a family member who takes 13 pills a day and is not getting better, but his doctor has prescribed him all these different medications, and he's just taking them, and he faithfully takes these medications. He deals with the side effects. He's not getting any better. And so one of my younger family members said, well, I thought that the medication would help him, you know? And so when I see something like that, just for my natural human observation, I think, well, maybe this isn't really working. And maybe there needs to be a different approach or more natural way to care or something.
Well, I think there are a couple of pieces to what you're saying. I think similar to as we talked about cancer, cancer's not one thing. And I think that the drug industry is not one entity. It's multiple industries. And so I think that I think it's important to think about all of the different medicines that have helped people live longer over the years. I mean, I think 100 years ago, people were not living past the age of 45. And so part of it has to do with just our environments have been better. We have sewers and proper water and, we're just living in an environment that's not as dangerous. Mm-hmm. But we have things like vaccines. I mean, and people who were exposed to polio and smallpox and yellow fever and all these diseases that wiped out huge populations, we don't see those anymore because we have those vaccines that are manufactured by pharmaceutical companies, mm-hmm. so that they could be distributed widely. Now, I think that there is some counter argument that we're making right now with opioids, with the drugs that are used to treat pain. And as a cancer doctor, this is a difficult area for me because some of our patients, especially towards the end of life, really need proper pain control. They need these medicines to help with severe cancer pain. Mm-hmm. And we know that they work. But we also know that there's been a period of time in our country where people have been prescribed too many pills for a simple surgery.
Right.
And we understand you don't need, 90 pills after you have a very basic, simple procedure where Tylenol and ibuprofen could do just as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's a recognition of that, and I think that there's a shifting of our practice currently within medicine, recognizing that. I think it's important that a lot of us who practice medicine course correct when we see that there's an issue with something.
Right.
So there's some drugs that we used 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that we now have better drugs, so we don't use those anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's definitely a role for pharmaceutical companies. They're the only entity that can manufacture this stuff and distribute it widely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very important for research in developing new drugs as well. KU is one of a major academic center where we're developing and designing new cancer drugs and other drugs to treat diseases, but we can't make them. We're an academic institution, so you really need to partner with pharmaceutical companies. If you've discovered something you think is going to help, you need to be able to study it in clinical trials, you need to be able to test it out, and you need pharmaceutical companies to partner with to develop the drug further. On the flip side of it, I think that there is a lot of work that we can do in medicine to talk about prevention and to really help people in being healthier and, as you said earlier, taking more responsibility for their own health. So there's lots of things that we need to change in the middle of the obesity epidemic that we have, and in encouraging people to seek counseling and therapy for the mental health crises that we have, the opioid addictions that we have. So there are lots of medical conditions that I think people outside of traditional medicine could really play a role in helping us impact the health of our communities.
Thank you so much. Callers, stay with us. We are going to take a station break. We are talking to Dr. Dineo Cabelli, professor and director of oncology at the KU School of Medicine, here on the Urban Connection Show, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
In appreciation of your support for over 30 years, KKFI invites you to join us for our 30th anniversary celebration Saturday, June 30th at the Folly Theater, featuring two all-star bands backing up over 20 artists, including Clint Ashlock, Cubanisms, Kadesh Flow, Kemet the Phantom, Pablo Senueza, and more. Mingle with DJs and hosts, enjoy the KKFI history presentation and founders panel, and party like only the KKFI community can. Tickets starting at just $15. More info, including about the special VIP reception, at kkfi.org/events.
Jaws of Justice Radio investigates how we can achieve justice from a system of laws deeply rooted in economic, political, and social inequality. We strive to dispel misconceptions created by the news and entertainment industries, as well as the fear-mongering of the political system. Listen in as we search out the tools needed to make our community a more just environment. Jaws of Justice Radio, Mondays at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
And we are back here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Ebony Johnson, your host for Urban Connections. Donna Wolf and Barry Jackson are out. And our guest is Dr. Danao Kabeli, who is professor and director of gynecologic oncology at the KU School of Medicine. And we just left off talking about various drugs and treatments. And we do have a caller on the line. So we are going to take that call and then go from there. Caller, if you would please state your name and where you're calling from. You are on the air.
I'm Harold from Kansas City, Kansas.
All right. And Harold, go ahead and ask your question to Dr. Kabeli.
My question is, first of all, I'd like to go back to your first question. You were saying that cancer was, when you were explaining it, you said It changes irregular, but you didn't go in and explain the detail why just because it grows irregular, why is that considered negative?
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a very good question. So what happens is the cells grow abnormally; they can create a tumor that can take over an organ. So let's say So, for instance, in the African American community, prostate cancer is one of the most common cancers in black men. And if you have prostate cancer, what happens is it starts out as a growth of abnormal cells. Those cells end up becoming very abnormal and create a tumor. And that tumor can take over the entire prostate, can block urine coming out, can cause kidney damage, can also spread. So if it's not treated, then those cells can spread to other places in the body, like to the bone or to the lungs. And usually the cancer spread is what eventually leads people to die from cancer. And so the cancer itself starts as a collection of abnormal cells. Those cells end up becoming actually a tumor or a growth that then takes over a body's organs. And that's why cancer is so devastating. I hope that answered your question.
Okay. All right. I just needed more information. That's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate your call. For anyone else who wants to join in on the conversation with Dr. Kabeli around cancer, you can give us a call at 816-931-5534. Again, that number is 816-931-5534. And Dr. Kabeli, during the break, you mentioned a couple of organizations within your school.
Yes.
Within the KU Medical School.
Yes, I wanted to make sure that I mentioned that I'm a professor in the School of Medicine, but most of my job is within the University of Kansas Cancer Center. Mm-hmm. And our cancer center is the only National Cancer Institute designated cancer center in the region. And what that means is that in order to become a National Cancer Institute center, you have to have a certain level of care that you provide your population. You have to have a certain number of experts that are available to give this care. You have to have a certain level of research that is being done. Mm-hmm. And so this is, I think we're in the 11th year or so of the Cancer Center. And this year we're developing a Women's Cancer Center focus within that. And we've just launched our new building, which is at our Indian Creek campus off of Nall Avenue. And that's just opened within the past 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So we're very excited. Now we have these experts who all we do is focus on women's cancers, breast and gynecological cancer. So we have surgeons, medical oncologists, radiologists, pathologists, whole bunch of experts this is all we do.
Wow.
Yeah.
We do have another caller. I think something happened there with the caller decided not to to join you. But if something happened with your where you dropped the call, you can give us a call back here at the station at 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. Dr. Cabelli, I want to talk about lifestyle and how just even breaking down that, whether it's cancer or heart disease or any number of things, it's still dis-ease. And how much of a contributing factor is just the very nature of the way we live today, where we're seeing a rise? Oh, these numbers are increasing. Oh, look who's got this. Oh, you know, now this is this. How much of it has to do with just the way we live, higher levels of stress, you know, a faster pace, not really being with family and loved ones as much, or, you know, how much of it is, do you see, contributes to that alone?
Well, we do know that a healthy lifestyle is very, very important. Now, it's not the whole entire story. People can be super healthy and still, unfortunately, be exposed to other factors like genetic factors in which they develop cancer. But certainly, lifestyle affects your risk of developing cancer. And so obesity is one of the main issues we have in this country, and the obesity epidemic shown over the past 30 to 40 years that Americans are just getting bigger and bigger. And part of it is not just an individual, it's a societal problem. The messages that we get in our sedentary lifestyle, a combination of that and the easy access to just huge amounts of junk food, just make it very, very simple to gain weight. We're sitting a lot more, sedentary lifestyle. We have access to cheap fast food. And I just think that those are things that make it very hard for an individual to overcome. And that's an area where we really need to focus in our society. We've shifted the conversation or the societal expectations around smoking. So if you go across the country, you don't see people smoking. You know, we used to fly in a plane. People would smoke on the plane. You know, nobody smokes on a plane anymore. So there are things that can be done from a systemic and a societal point of view that can reduce the risks. And I think that some of these public health initiatives can help. And certainly an individual can make some changes, personal changes. But we have to understand that our individual changes are up against this huge mountain of competing messages and lifestyles that make it very, very difficult. So, but you're right. I mean, lifestyle does play a contributing role.
Are you, for yourself, just in your mom and in her being, and thank you for sharing that, the personal story with us, just with your mom and then you being a doctor who studies the very disease that your mom has overcome. How would you say, just what you know and then what you personally experienced with your mom, how did that change things for you or play a role?
Well, it made me realize that I had to not be a doctor when I was going to appointments with her. And actually, the type of cancer that she has, I'm not an expert in that. And I think we started the conversation talking about cancer's multiple diseases. I am not an expert in leukemia. And luckily, she was treated in Nashville at a place that where they had these experts. And I was able to, I was still working at Vanderbilt at the time, and I was able to go to her appointments with her, and I took care of her during her stem cell transplant. But what I really noticed and what really struck me during that time is I had all these resources. I had all I had the resources to help take care of her, and it was exhausting. So what I would always think about is, just imagine if I didn't have these resources. How do people do this? How do you, you know, and as a doctor, if I'm offering a treatment, I'm expecting people to come in every 3 weeks, and then every week you've got to get your labs drawn, and you have to come in, and you've got to, and so it made me really appreciate the barriers that people have, mm-hmm. Who perhaps don't have as many resources mm-hmm. as I do, and how difficult it is to go through treatments. Mm-hmm. Just basic things like transportation, who's going to pick you up and drop you off, and yeah. who's going to, if you feel really sick, who's going to stay with you mm-hmm. and you know, make sure that you've got all your medicines in order if you're confused and you're tired.
Mm-hmm.
So that yeah. really made me very, very appreciative of what many of my patients go through.
Mm-hmm. Have you just yourself in seeing the different types of women, mm-hmm. And now you mentioned a center that's just solely focused on women.
Mm-hmm.
Is this, how do we compare to other places in the world?
Yeah.
If you can speak to that. Just in the level of cancer that, you know, that's here in the United States, the various treatments mm-hmm. That we use as opposed to people in the Eastern Hemisphere
yeah.
or, you know, or what have you, the way that they see it and are experiencing it. Do you have any?
Well, I do know, and we talked back, harking back to what we talked about with lifestyle. So in mm-hmm. industrialized nations, so mm-hmm. Europe, Canada, United States, Australia, there are very similar rates of similar types of cancers.
Okay.
Unfortunately, as our Western lifestyle and industrialized nation lifestyle travels across the world, we're seeing higher, you know, increasing rates of cancers like breast cancer mm-hmm. and colon cancer in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And in Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
The types of cancers are different in these different parts of the world because exposures are different. So in some parts of Southeast Asia, they have stomach cancer more commonly mm-hmm. because of lifestyle or types of fish they eat.
Yeah.
There's a higher rate of certain types of lymphoma or AIDS-related cancers in parts of Africa because the rates of HIV and AIDS are higher in some of those areas.
Mm-hmm.
There's increased rates of cervical cancer in South America, Africa, and Southeast Asia because they don't have good screening and good mm-hmm. ability to treat the precancer or detect it early.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's different, based on exposures mm-hmm. and lifestyle, they're different cancers.
Mm-hmm.
I must say that within the industrialized nations, though, we have very sophisticated healthcare for the very, very top in the United States, and we're leaders in that. But if we look across the board, we're really very similar in our rates of cure and our incidence compared to any other industrialized country. But if you look at subpopulations, and this is where we talk about health disparities, mm-hmm. if we look at really rural people who are out in rural areas of the United States or people who are really urban areas of the United States,
mm-hmm.
so many people of color, but many Caucasians who live in rural areas, mm-hmm. their prognosis and how they do is much less than people who have easy access to care.
Yeah.
And so one of the challenges we face in the state of Kansas is we have, you know, these urban areas, but then we have a huge part of our state that's rural. So there are a lot mm-hmm. of people who live out in these very small towns or out on farms, and they don't have access to health care as routinely as people who live in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the charges of what we're doing at the University of Kansas Cancer Center is to try to reach out to those populations, whether you're you have health disparities because you live in a rural area, mm-hmm. whether you have health disparities because you live in an urban area, to try to improve outcomes by increasing access to care.
Okay, thank you for that. I have another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. Please state your name, where you're calling from.
I'm sorry, it's me again, Harold from Kansas. I was just calling for a future date, maybe schedule another time to really deal with your first question, what is cancer?
Okay.
Yes, ma'am, that's it.
Okay.
To really deal with it, because that's all. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in. Well, and with that, because we are coming, have the last 10 or so minutes here, can you say again for us, Dr. Cabelli, what is cancer and how it differentiates from other types of diseases?
Well, I mean, it's different from something like diabetes, mm-hmm. where or heart disease, mm-hmm. Where in diabetes, you're really not able to manage how your body processes glucose, mm-hmm. and it can cause some very long-term problems and end up affecting your organs like your kidneys, mm-hmm. if you're not processing glucose properly over time. Heart disease, you can have a heart attack that causes damage to your muscle wall of the heart, and mm-hmm. then over time can cause heart failure. Mm-hmm. So those are different types of diseases that are pretty much very different from what I'm describing for cancer, where you have a normal organ like a cervix. It mm-hmm. gets infected by a virus like human papillomavirus, and that actually causes your normal cancer cervical cells to grow abnormally and develop into a growth or a tumor. Mm-hmm. And that growth can then take over the cervix, mm-hmm. and it can cause bleeding, it can cause pain, it can cause an abnormal discharge, and that's how most women present with advanced cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then those cells can break off and spread through the bloodstream or mm-hmm. through the lymph glands and can go to other places in the body and start growing again mm-hmm. in those other places in the body. So cancer, what happens within those cells is there's some genetics that happen, some DNA, something happens to the DNA of those cells that makes them grow abnormally.
Mm-hmm.
There's also something that happens to the organ that they're in that allows these cells to grow abnormally, and they become this tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are symptoms for cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And if it spreads, it can spread through the blood to the lungs, or can spread through the lymph glands throughout the internal part of the abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
And that can eventually, over time, can cause the tumor can become so big that it can block off the kidney function. Mm-hmm. So it can cause kidney failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one cause of death from cervical cancer. But the good news is that most people are diagnosed really, really early. We can actually cure cervical cancer. We can also prevent it with the vaccine. So mm-hmm. those are the two most important messages I can say about that.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen just, you know, we talked earlier and you talked about certain things that just natural in life you learn, okay, hey, these drugs are working, but you know, now yeah. we have new drugs we've learned and things are different. As far as chemotherapy mm-hmm. is concerned, and in particular with women, you know, and oh my gosh, is my hair going to fall
yes,
out? Or oh
yeah.
my goodness, you know, like chemotherapy, that's just the, you know, something so awful yeah. to hear. You know, it comes with a lot of things
yeah.
around that term and what people have seen other people yeah. that they know experience. Is that, in many cases, still in your experience one of the most effective methods of treatment, or are we coming up on other?
It just depends on the type of cancer. I mean, if we can diagnose cervical and uterine cancer early, the treatment is surgery. People don't even have to have any sort of chemotherapy or additional mm-hmm. treatment afterwards. But when the cancer has spread and it's gone through the lymph glands or it's gone through the bloodstream, then you mm-hmm. really need something that goes through the blood and goes through the entire body to
okay.
attack those cancer cells. And that's where chemotherapy comes in.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands of chemotherapy drugs out there. Thousands.
Oh, really?
Literally. So we're going to pick specific combinations for specific types of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So the side effects are going to depend on whatever combination of drugs we have for mm-hmm. a particular type of cancer. So for cervical cancer, we give chemotherapy with radiation often,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes that chemotherapy we give with the radiation does not cause hair to fall out,
mm-hmm.
but it can cause some other side effects.
Mm-hmm.
For ovarian cancer, we use a combination of chemotherapy. 90% of people, their hair is going to fall out,
mm-hmm.
but it grows back later. But But there's another group of side effects associated with that. Mm-hmm. So each, I mean, I think what's really, really important and a message that I'd like to get out is that whatever cancer you have, there's going to be a particular type of treatment for that cancer. So somebody will come to me and talk about, oh, my Aunt Sue had this and this and this, and it's a completely mm-hmm. different kind of cancer. It was 25 years ago with a completely different group of drugs. Yeah. It's not in any way related to what you have sitting in front of me. So I try to make it as clear as possible how we're going to individualize the care for your type of cancer and for you. Mm-hmm. And so there may be some options based on the side effects that we can change to if you're not tolerating the first option. Mm-hmm. And so this is how we really work with people throughout their treatment. And so I did want to mention before we're done that there that since we've built this Women's Cancer Center, there's actually a phone number and a direct line people want to call for appointments. It's 913-574-1594. And oftentimes, it's just important to get another opinion. Mm-hmm. And we're because of the experts that we have, you know, if you diagnose with breast cancer, right now breast cancer is multiple different types of cancer, and there are different ways of treating breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to have that biopsy that shows that you have a breast cancer evaluated by experts mm-hmm. who can test it and say, well, actually, you need this first, or you need chemotherapy first, then surgery, or you don't need chemotherapy at all. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to make sure that you're in the right hands with the right person the first time around in getting experts to weigh in mm-hmm. on what type of treatment, because it's not one size fits all at all.
Can you say that the organization, where it's located, and the number again? And if it's you all have a website as well.
So this is the University of Kansas Cancer Center, and that's the global. We've developed a Women's Cancer Center within that. Our website is www.kucancercenter.org. And our phone number is 913-574-1594. And that number is really a way to reach our nurse navigators who can talk people through who would be appropriate for you to see, or if this is an appropriate place for you to come. And we're very excited about mm-hmm. this new initiative. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous place. It's off of Nall Avenue. You have the address at one point. I was looking for the Indian Creek. It's an Indian Creek campus of our cancer center.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah. As far as things that you may be able to share with us women when we're at home mm-hmm. or warning signs or things to watch out for. I mean, we've talked about lifestyle and eating habits, and as you've mentioned, certain things come with genetics.
Yeah.
But are there certain signs if we're feeling a certain way or noticing certain symptoms?
Yeah.
Can you share? And I know, as you mentioned, there are so many different types, but specifically what you've worked with.
So
and what
for gynecological cancers, they're a group of symptoms. It's really important to see your gynecologist, and that gynecologist needs to refer you to a gynecologic oncologist, which is a cancer specialist, if the workup is suspicious for cancer. So you need to see your gynecologist as a woman if you have postmenopausal bleeding. You've gone through the change of life and you start bleeding, that's not normal. You got to go in and see your gynecologist. If you start having a discharge, especially if it's foul smelling, if you have bleeding after intercourse, you need to be evaluated. If you have abdominal or pelvic pain that's constant, that's not relieved by something like Motrin or ibuprofen. If you have major changes in your bowel or bladder habits, and then some additional... for instance, if some people have just regular bowel movements and all of a sudden have weeks and weeks of being really constipated, start to have nausea, vomiting, and they don't have food poisoning.
Okay.
So that tells you sort of need to probably get that worked up. And then for ovarian cancer, many women have symptoms for months of you know, feeling bloated. Mm-hmm. They eat and they feel full early. Mm-hmm. And many of those women need to be evaluated. If they've gone through a gastroenterologist and nothing comes up, they need to go back to their gynecologist to be referred to a gynecologic oncologist. I was going to give you the address of the Indian Creek campus. This is the Women's Cancer Center at the University of Kansas Cancer Center. It's 10710 Nall Avenue in Overland Park. And again, the phone number is 913-574-1594.
Thank you so much. I have a question around one of the symptoms. Is you talked about like abdominal pain, mm-hmm. and if ibuprofen or maybe some other things don't help. What about women who have severe cramps during their menstrual cycles? Yeah. Is that something potentially associated with cancer?
No, but that's something definitely to talk about with your gynecologist, because that is something that definitely affects your lifestyle and your quality of life, mm-hmm. to have debilitating cramps during each menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. And a common condition that's not cancer amongst African American women is fibroid tumors, mm-hmm. which can cause really bad cramping pain. And there are medicines for that that sometimes work, and sometimes they don't. And so ultimately, sometimes women need surgery. And I've got to say that we also take care of women who have very large fibroids. And, mm-hmm. and I had a patient who did not want anybody to do a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
But her life was, she almost died from these fibroids because mm-hmm. she would bleed out and she looked like she was 9 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And it was blocking her intestines. And it ended up being just really sort of a tragic situation that we could have taken care of earlier, mm-hmm. but she really was very attached to her uterus, mm-hmm. and I was the first doctor who she actually felt comfortable even talking about doing a hysterectomy, and mm-hmm. we did her hysterectomy, and it was one of the more difficult surgeries I've ever done. It was more difficult than a cancer surgery, which could be mm-hmm. very complicated, and it's because she had waited 15 years to do this. She should have had it done many years ago. But she didn't trust any of her doctors. She didn't really, and so it took months to convince her, and we got it done, and she is doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes surgery is the ultimate for something like fibroids.
But some of the – I'm glad that you shared some of the warning signs or things to pay attention to. I think sometimes, circling back to our conversation about lifestyle – when we're so busy, sometimes we're not paying attention to ourselves, and we're not tuning into those, the little whispers, and then it becomes a big thunderstorm warning,
exactly.
and an alert goes out on the air, just like we had.
You know,
and then you're like, what's going on? But we didn't have...
But I'd say go to the doctor. You don't know how many women I've spoken to who said, oh, I haven't been... When's the last time you went to a doctor? Oh, it's 20 years ago when I had my last baby. Oh, no. Even if it's every other year, just get checked out and find somebody that you can trust and you're comfortable with so that you could keep going back, because it's so important to take care of yourself. I see so many women, I think I would say the biggest tragedy is women take care of everybody else and everything but themselves, and then they're last on the list, and then but they're the backbone of the community. So
thank you so much for being
welcome.
Here.
It's my pleasure.
And today is a marathon day for me. So you've been so great, and I'm so glad that you're here. And Bob, he's in the background with media relations with KU, has been helpful as well in facilitating this conversation.
Thank you.
We have been talking with Dr. Deneo Cabelli, who is the professor and director of gynecologic oncology at KU School of Medicine. And before we go, Dr. Cabelli, do you have any, if someone wants to follow you and your work, is there a way that people can do that? Or,
well, we're revamping my website for my lab and my research. But certainly, if you go to the KU Cancer Center website, there'll be information about the kind of work that I do. And there'll be information about the Women's Cancer Center as well.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kansas City. Please stay tuned for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson, and then later Roots Wise Reggae with Rock and Donna. You tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.